the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Minutes before the top of the hour, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Our good friend Josh Cooper of Yahoo Sports is going to join us momentarily. Producer Rory doing a great job getting him on the line. This segment of the show brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com.
I was with Aaron from Bernstein's Deli last night.
Yeah.
We were watching the first game of the Western Conference Final at Brazen Hall down the street on Pamina. Fantastic place to watch the game, by the way. And
did they pay you for that plug?
Maybe.
Okay. Can you share the money with the rest of us?
I'm good.
Okay. Good to know. Do we have Josh? We got Josh. All right.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome back to the program our very good friend, Josh Cooper. Josh covers the NHL for Yahoo Sports.
Mr. California.
Mr. California. Mr. Hollywood, who before he was Mr. Hollywood, was Mr. Music City USA. So there really isn't any... This is the battle for your love, Josh. Is it not this Western Conference Final? The Predators and the Ducks, the two teams that you're very familiar with?
Yes, and at the end of this battle, who will win the final rose is the question.
There you go. As long as you brought the Bachelorette or the Bachelor into the picture.
You set it up for me. You just put it out there about a battle for my affection, much like Vanessa versus whoever was the runner-up. And it's amazing how we forget the runner-up in the last
season. I thought it was Raven.
Raven, that's who it was, yes. Well, okay, we get to watch Raven again in Bachelor in Paradise. That'll be glorious.
Now, Josh, before we get deep into the series, can you confirm or deny that in addition to the Clarence Campbell Trophy, the winner of this series will also lift up a cardboard cutout of your face? Is that true as well?
No.
No. Sorry.
It's funny. I walking in the Preds locker room, there's so many guys who on that team who were not there when I was there, probably more now who are new faces. And I mean, really, it's like, you know, I know Roman Josi and like Mike Fisher. He wasn't around yesterday to talk to the media, but really there's not a ton of familiarity for me and the team. I mean, there's some with the management and, you know, a lot of the people around the team who I know have worked so hard to get to this point, and to see them actually ecstatic over it was funny. Yesterday, the Preds were answering a question in the post game about being the underdog, and I'm sitting there and I'm like, these guys are not the underdog. They're pretty much the favorite. I mean, they should be the favorite. I mean, but to see the organization and people I know there have worked so long and hard for this to go into the series as the alpha, so to speak. I mean, it's a pretty neat thing seeing that and watching them just really kind of get excited over everything that's going on here.
Well, let's talk about that for a second there, Josh. The Predators obviously come into this series. They swept the Blackhawks in four straight, which was, I think, an upset in everybody's mind. They dispatched the St. Louis Blues in six games. I don't want to say, you know, with ease, but, you know, relatively speaking, it was sort of an easy series. At no point in time did you really think that the Predators were at risk of losing that series. So are they ready for their moment as sort of the alpha dogs in the Western Conference?
Well, it's interesting the way it's broken down. And what I find really fascinating is, so the Blackhawks win was absolutely, you know, it was a watershed moment for the franchise. And it wasn't just the fact that they beat them. It was the fact that they beat them in four games. I thought that was probably the most impressive part of the whole thing. So that's what I found really fascinating about that. The Blues series, I thought Nashville went into that, honestly, as the better team. I've never really thought that this Blues team, despite the fact they had a really good record after February, that they were any sort of contender in the West. Nashville to me just had more talent than them, and I saw them winning that series. And this series, and granted, a lot of it just has to do with taking care of business and the way Nashville dispatches Chicago has just set them up so well in this postseason. So the Anaheim Ducks and the Nashville Predators both played game sixes last Sunday. Nashville beat the Blues. The Ducks did not beat the Edmonton Oilers and actually lost 7-1, which set up an emotional game 7 on Wednesday for the Ducks. And then this series started yesterday. And you could tell that Nashville was just so much fresher. And you could tell that they were so much more ready for this series in this moment than the Ducks were. And that has nothing to do with this. That's not to say that the Ducks, you know, weren't ready for kind of their time in the sun. It just had to do with the fact that they did not beat the Oilers in Game 6, which set up a really big Game 7 where they put an incredible amount of effort into the last two periods of that game to come back and beat Edmonton. So I think that, and not just that, the way this series scheduled, it goes every other day. And because it goes every other day, you don't have one of those situations where a team gets an extra day to kind of reset and refocus and come back. And I think that that sets up well for Nashville. So overall, I mean, I think that the stars are aligned for the Predators, but I think that they work to make it happen because they swept the Blackhawks, because they beat the Blues in six games and didn't let it go to a game seven. And I think that that's why they're in, I mean, they're up 1-0 already, but that's why I think overall they're in better shape this series than the Ducks were beforehand, just because of how they played those previous series and the way they set up the series, and also the fact that they couldn't even start on Saturday if they wanted to because stars on ice in Anaheim. So, I mean, it's all coming up really well for Nashville right now.
Josh, this series is far from over, and many of us expect it to go either six or hopefully seven games. In your opinion, does Ryan Johansson have to outplay Ryan Getzlaff in order for the Predators to win? He certainly got the better of Getzlaff in game one.
No, because I don't think he can. And I would agree he did, but, I mean, Getzlaff was still incredible last night. I mean, he may not have had the same prolific, you know, numbers that Johansson had, but, I mean, Getzlaff's a better center than Ryan Johansson. I mean, he's not going to outplay him. But I think what he does in watching this Predators team with Ryan Johansson versus past teams is he really gives them that number one center that can do so much on the ice. And I think that one of the things that, you know, really is the reason why the center is kind of the it position in the NHL right now is because it just touches so many parts of the game. And really, I mean, Ryan Johansson is the first guy. I mean, they traded for Peter Forsberg years ago, but, I mean, he was kind of near the end of his career. It wasn't quite the same. But, you know, to me, Ryan Johansson is the first true, legit first-line center that this team has ever had. And I think that he changes the way they're able to play and changes kind of the personality and what you see out of this team. This is not the same kind of Predators team that is so blue line focused. And then kind of it's like, oh, you know, if David Legwon can chip in some offense or finally realize his potential as the number two overall pick, which was like, you know, pretty much every year in Nashville is waiting for David Legwon to realize his potential up until his 30s. You know, maybe they'll be able to go on a run. It's not like that anymore. It's like you have a guy who's a legit number one center. And it's so funny. Last night in the press room, you know, we were sitting around joking about kind of Predators team's past. We were like, yeah, remember when they signed Olli Jokinen to be the number one center? Or it was like, hey, remember when they signed Matt Cullen to be the number one center? It's like, hey, remember when we thought Victor Stahlberg was going to score 30 goals and they were telling us he was going to? I mean, they really finally found a mix of guys who could score and do all the things they've been talking about doing. And in the past, it was almost like using duct tape to try to find it, but they finally have legit players in different spots that can do it. And I think that that's such a big difference for this team right now. And Ryan Johansson, to go back to your question, plays a major role in that.
Josh, as Drew touched on, you spent a number of years in Nashville covering this Predators team. What does it mean for the city known as Smashville to have, you know, be in the third round for the first time and be seen as a team that can threaten for the Stanley Cup championship?
I think people are pretty excited. You see it in the TV ratings. You know, talking to people yesterday, because, Grant, I have not been to a game there in probably over 2 years, however long I've been living out in L.A. now. You talk to the people there, and they all bring up the fact that it's even, like, it was a great atmosphere when I was there. They're like, it's even better now. And you're hearing just broadcasters saying, like, look, I can't hear a thing, like, you know, when I'm there. Like, I can hardly even hear myself think because it's such a loud building. You know, it does mean a lot. But I mean, to me, honestly, it means a lot more to the people there who work in the organization, because it really has sort of been like a little brother syndrome there for a long time, where you had just so many other franchises in the West, be it, you know, the LA Kings, the Chicago Blackhawks, especially the Blackhawks, the team that always beats them. Even before then, when the Detroit Red Wings were in the Western Conference, they could never beat Detroit, except that one time in 2012. And it just means a lot to the people who work there, the fact that, again, they're not sort of this nice little hockey team that does a lot with a little. Like, they're legitimately a good hockey team. And I think, honestly, a lot of that, to me, you know, a lot of the credit people have been giving to Peter Laviolette, the coach. But, I mean, you know, like, Peter Laviolette has way more weapons now than Barry Trotz ever did when he was there. And it's a very well-balanced, very well-put-together hockey team. And, I mean, watching the game, I took some heat on this last night when I posted this on Twitter, but I really think, honestly, like, he had a great assist, but P.K. Subban's like the fourth best defenseman on the team right now. And when you have that type of depth, you know, I think it says a lot to how what's the type of team that you've built there.
Josh Cooper of Yahoo Sports is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're discussing the Western Conference Final between the Ducks and the Predators. Josh, at this point in the playoffs, and maybe at this point in his career, but maybe that might be too strong, is Corey Perry a driving force kind of player on this Ducks team, or is he more of a complimentary piece?
I know where you're going. No. And honestly, the injury to Patrick Eaves, which is, it blows my mind that Patrick Eaves has just blown past Corey Perry in the depth chart. But, I mean, the injury to Patrick Eaves has really hurt this team. And they were able to get through Edmonton, despite the fact that Eaves was injured in the last round. But, I mean, you know, he was just absolute magic playing with Ryan Getzlaf down the stretch. And Corey Perry it's crazy to think this, just because of the disparity in salary. I mean, Corey Perry makes over $8 million. Patrick Eaves this year made $1 million. They're the same age and were picked in the same draft. But, I mean, that Patrick Eaves is that much better than Corey Perry at this stage of their careers. But, I mean, Corey Perry he's like a shell of himself. I don't know what's going on there. We've been trying to – I mean, and he had that incredible Game 5 where he had 3 points and scored the overtime winner against the Edmonton Oilers. And, you know, he had a big game against the Calgary Flames in the previous round that sort of made you forget how far he's fallen. But, I mean, he just doesn't look like he's anywhere near the same type of driving force, as you mentioned, that he used to be. And, I mean, we don't really know what's wrong there. I mean, maybe it's just the fact he's played a lot of hockey over the last year. He's at the World Championships last year, played in the World Cup this year. He's 32 years old. But, I mean, he's just – he was not fast to begin with, but he certainly looks a step or two slower than normal. And he's not getting those opportunities where he's able to use his kind of hands and creativity around the net, which is how he always used to score all his goals. And, I mean, he can't make his own shot. Like, he needs Ryan Getzlaf to get him the puck. And that's a problem when you're not self-sufficient like you used to be. And, I mean, we've been sitting here waiting for some sort of kind of flash from him to just sort of be like, oh, wow, you know, he was finally able to put it together for a game. But even in that three-point game where he scored the overtime winner against the Oilers and had 2 assists, I mean, he still didn't look that great for most of the game. So, I mean, it's hard to really know what's going on there. But, no, he's not nearly the same player he used to be. And when you have a guy making the amount of money he's making and producing as little as he is, that's pretty bad for a team for the most part. And that really puts a lot of pressure on other guys to perform.
Josh, moving over to the Eastern Conference Final, Game 1 goes tonight between the Penguins and the Senators. Do the Senators have any chance of winning this series?
So I wrote the preview for this on Puck Daddy. You can read it. And it's funny. Like, kind of, I love writing these previews because I like being able to sort of kind of dig deep. Like, I mean, we can all like say we know everything about series and stuff like that, but really, like, unless you write a preview for it, like, you don't know as much as you think you do, and it really helps you kind of get into the stats and the nitty-gritty. And it's hard to see the Senators having a chance. And, you know, like, just they have Erik Karlsson, who's played a tremendous series, and then you have two players who have 9 points in their playoff, I guess in the playoffs this year, and that's Derek Brassard and Bobby Ryan. And, I mean, Peugeot has 7 goals, and that's been nice for them, but honestly, guys, like, they don't really have a lot up and down their lineup to contend with the superstars of the Penguins. And, I mean, in today's day and age in the NHL, again, like, there is so much parity, and anyone can win, but I just don't see it out of this team. Like, I mean, I think that they've been able to sort of get by because the Boston Bruins, you know, like, they're a good team, but they're, you know, they don't really have championship medal. You know, in the last round being the New York Rangers, I mean, let's face it, the Rangers screwed up that series. I mean, they should have won that series. They lost it, and Ottawa just played very disciplined hockey and kind of prevented anything, you know, I guess prevented the Rangers from really running away with anything. But, you know, the most telling stat for me about the Senators is that, so they are 3-2 when they score the first goal, and they are 5-2 when the other team scores the first goal. The Penguins are 7-1 when they score the first goal. I mean, do we really think that when the Penguins score first, the Senators are going to be able to come back like they did against the Rangers or the Bruins? Like, I just don't see it. So, you know, like, it'll be, I don't even know if it'll be a good series. Like, I really don't. I mean, like, the Senators have done a great job getting this point, but it really just sort of has been with this kind of rope-a-dope strategy of almost tiring other teams out offensively and then striking at the end. And you can't deny the fact that Erik Karlsson is certainly the most important player to his team left in the playoffs, but I don't see it going past 5 games. I really don't.
Josh, we're running up against the clock, so I'm going to save my Frank the Turtle question about Peter, Coach Laviolette's pet turtle for the next round if the Predators make it that far. And I will ask you about the appearance of Paul Kariya, who we saw in a video by the Ducks, and we haven't seen much of Paul Kariya at all. Does this maybe a sign or an indication that he may be ready to return to the fold in some capacity?
I don't think so. I mean, it was, you know, it was great to, the thing when you watch that video that's so cool is you see him in the orange Ducks jersey, because which is neat, because honestly it's the same franchise, different name, different colors and stuff like that, but we haven't seen him in that, and you've never seen him in sort of the new Ducks garb, so to speak, so that was cool. But I don't think so. I mean, part of it was a charity event or charity type situation where you know, he helped paint the number with Kai Quiñones, who is the Ducks Make-A-Wish kid from 2 years ago, and it was an absolutely incredible story, and it was an exceptionally emotional night when they had him out there. And, you know, from what I've heard is that Paul Kariya, you know, he'll never turn down anything from a charity perspective. He loves doing that. But I think it's more from a hockey thing. He just, with the way his career played out with the concussions and everything else, I just think he doesn't want a part of the game. I don't think he wants a part of the NHL, and I honestly can't blame him, just because he could have really been one of the all-time greats. And if he was protected better by the league, you know, maybe, you know, we're talking about him in the same breath as some other incredible players. But, you know, the fact that he just suffered so many concussions, and it was at a time when, I mean, you remember, he was allowed to come back in that game. I think it was a game. I don't remember what game it was in the 2003 Cup Finals, but after getting absolutely annihilated, knocked out, so to speak, by Scott Stevens. And you read stories that Kariya doesn't even remember what happened the rest of that that game. I don't recall if he said that series, but I know he at least said that game. And there's a lot of stuff that he's probably got to deal with the league to work through before he comes back in a more permanent basis.
You ready to watch Melissa MacArthur and Melissa McCarthy as Spicy tonight there, Josh?
You know, I'm not a huge Melissa McCarthy fan, to be honest. I'm probably in the minority of this. I actually really didn't like Bridesmaids at all. But yeah, sure. I mean, it's like, it's gotten to the point now where parody is, I don't even think you can, it's like parody in real life are the same thing. So I can't really do much. I can't really, it's become so nuts. But But what I am excited is to see Rachel's quest to find true love starting May 22nd.
There you go. And on that note, we'll leave it there, Josh. Josh Cooper, he covers the NHL for Yahoo.com, and he covers The Bachelor for this program as well. He's our special Bachelor correspondent. Josh, thank you.
Thank you. And if you see someone in the press box in Game 6 in Nashville watching The Bachelorette, it'll be me.
We know it will be. Alrighty, Josh. Take care, buddy. When we come back, we'll touch on the postmortems of the Blues, the Rangers, and the Oilers real quick on those. That's coming up next on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show returns. Now you're on the curve on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Big thanks to Josh Cooper for joining us. Some great insight into the Western Conference Finals. This segment is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit RumorsComedyClub.com. Jay Malone at Rumors tonight, his final night in town after two stellar weeks of stand-up comedy. Two shows, 7:15 and 10 p.m. Very few tickets available by my understanding, but you can get them quickly at RumorsComedyClub.com.
By the way, how many times are they going to show this guy jumping into the water fountain at Kauffman Stadium?
I thought it was Hustler.
Yeah, it's not Hustler. It was a good guess there, Dave. I mean, it's on the loop. So, I mean, every time you look up, it's just, you know,
do I see this guy in his sopping jeans? Like, it's enough already.
Yeah, you know, send a official letter of complaint to the CRTC. And, you know, I'm sure they'll be able to take care of it.
I don't even look up CRTC. How much effort that would take.
But it is a fair bit of effort. I agree with you on that front.
Did anybody think maybe he was just trying to bathe?
If it was you, people would have immediately thought that.
If there was a rag on a stick, then perhaps.
I have bathed in a fountain before.
In Minneapolis?
In Minneapolis. You slid down a fountain on...
That had no water on it.
No, it had water on it. He was soaking wet, Dave.
Oh.
It was.
I meant the part he slid down. Wasn't that dry?
No. The whole thing was wet. We were on Nicolette Avenue, Nicolette Mall.
Yeah.
And genius over here decided that it would be appropriate to slide down the fountain, got himself completely soaked, head to toe.
And wasn't there some injury as a result?
Oh, yeah, of course. He was injured. He was badly injured.
There was a couple scrapes and bruises.
And then you were wondering the next morning why your shoes were soaking wet.
I must mention there was a lot of alcohol involved.
No, that went without saying.
Yeah, that generally would go without saying. People don't generally go in fountains when they don't have alcohol in their system.
The same as the gentleman at Kauffman Stadium at the Royals game. He had plenty of alcohol going through his
system. I can relate to that guy.
You can relate to that
guy. I want to have a beer with that guy.
Yeah, except that guy is likely to remember the next morning why his shoes are soaking wet, whereas you were puzzled as we were on our way to the Vikings game why you were cold and wet the entire time.
That was a hell of a trip.
Yeah, I don't think we ever went on another trip with you. I think that was the last one.
That's not true. We went the next year.
Oh, boy. Mistakes.
Libel was on that trip.
Libel was on that trip. The rabbi.
Yeah.
Yeah. He immediately decided to find God after that because he hit rock bottom at that point in time. Quick programming note. Just want to make mention. We're off next week.
Thank God.
Semifinal action at the World Hockey Championships. So we'll have both games of the semifinals at the World Hockey Championships. So we're going to take the long weekend off. So no show next Saturday, but keep it tuned to TSN 1290 as we have coverage of the semifinals of the World Hockey Championship. And coming up later today, Canada against Switzerland. And I believe what is the 32nd game of the preliminary round of the World Hockey Championships. That's coming up later this afternoon here on TSN 1290.
They should actually add 6 more teams to the World Hockey Championship. Let's have 22 teams.
Yes, I think Brazil needs to be entered in. They're the next best team that hasn't qualified. Let's go to break. When we come back, Warren Reichel, he's the general manager of the Windsor Spitfires. The Memorial Cup starts next weekend. It's in Windsor. They have a player that the Winnipeg Jets drafted named Logan Stanley. We'll talk about the Memorial Cup. We'll talk about the Windsor Spitfires. It's all coming up next on hour number 3 of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, live on TSN 1290.
You're on the curve on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Hour number three of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. Working hard to get Windsor Spitfires General Manager Warren Reichel on the line. As soon as we do, we'll bring him to you on the program. Again, if you want to join the conversation, that you hear something you like, you hear something you don't like, try and be respectful. That's all we ask. At Illegal Curve, that's the best way to reach us here in studio. If you are more inclined to use Facebook, we're open to that possibility. Facebook.com/IllegalCurve. Ton of great pictures on our Instagram feeds. You can check that out as well. That's also, you know, Instagram.com/IllegalCurve. Do we have a Snapchat?
No.
No, we don't have a Snapchat?
I was going to say, there's not a lot of pictures happening on that Instagram these days.
Yeah, I don't have more a lot.
If you want to look back at the Jets season, there was a ton of great
photos. You
know what?
The truth is also that we're probably going to start adding some more, too, because our photographers are phenomenal guys, and they take some really great pictures throughout the year. And the truth is that, unfortunately, we don't get to use them all. So I will be adding some of the shots that these guys have taken throughout the season as I add them to our kind of database on the website and get them onto our Instagram, because, you know, both Colby Spence and Rodney Ron have taken some phenomenal pictures for IllegalCurve.com.
Is there any truth that they're photographing Ezzy's wedding?
That no.
That would break the camera. Ezzy at his wedding will break the camera. Nobody will believe it that it actually happened.
Yeah. No, but, there's no. They will not be shooting. They're not wedding photographers. They're different types of photographers. But no, the Instagram has really kind of taken off this year. So yeah,
they were also a little offended when Ezzy asked them to take his boudoir photos.
No, actually, Rodney was into it.
It's actually known as Doudoir, Drew.
Doudoir, okay. Anyways, we're working to get Warren Reichel on the program. Let's talk about the three teams. We talked about the Capitals, you know, extensively in the first hour of the show. Let's talk about the three teams that didn't advance in the NHL playoffs. That, of course, being the Blues, the Oilers, and the New York Rangers. Let's start with the Oilers, because that was a seven-game series there. It came down to a one-goal game between the Ducks and the Oilers, a fantastic series. This Edmonton Oilers team, are they a Stanley Cup contender in the 2017-18 season now? Given what you've seen, are they a Stanley Cup contender?
I think they can be, and I mean, it went to seven games against the Anaheim Ducks, right? So the Edmonton Oilers could have easily been in the Western Conference Finals. So, I mean, I didn't think the Edmonton Oilers were going to make the playoffs this year. I think many people felt the same way, right? I thought the Edmonton Oilers would be better than they were last year, and it helps to have a healthy Connor McDavid the whole year, right? But they also went out and they acquired Milan Lucic. They went out and they acquired Adam Larson. So, I mean, absolutely, I think this team is going to be a playoff contender for years to come, Drew. And I mean, sure, you can maybe retool the roster a little bit and add a piece here and add a piece there, but I don't think there are going to be major changes coming. And when you look at the Oilers, guys like Matt Benning and Darnell Nurse were good on the third pair, so I don't think you have to do much on defense. And as far as the forwards go, I mean, look, you got contributions from guys like Zach Cassian and David Desharnais on the bottom line. So if anything, you know, you're making a minor tweak here, a minor tweak there, but I don't think that the Oilers are going to do much, as I said. And absolutely, I think they are going to be a playoff contender for many years to come.
Yeah.
And just quickly, I would add that, remember, they've got Jesse Puljujärvi coming up through the system as well. I mean, you know, fourth overall pick last season. So, I mean, this is an Oilers team that's certainly on the rise.
Yeah, absolutely. And the questions this season about, you know, the future of guys like Ryan Nugent-Hopkins and Jordan Eberle, that's sort of a big offseason question for the Oilers to try to find the answer to.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to be joined by the general manager of the Windsor Spitfires, Warren Reichel. The Spitfires and the city of Windsor are going to host the Memorial Cup starting next weekend. Warren, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Hey, guys, how are you?
Doing very well, Warren. Appreciate your time this morning. Sure, it's a busy time of the season for yourself. You know, before we get into the on-ice matchups, you know, just, you know, how exciting are you? How excited is the city of Windsor? You know, it's been a culmination of a long year, and the Memorial Cup starting a week from now, give or take. It must be an exciting feeling in the city of Windsor.
Oh, it sure is. I mean, we bought the team 10 years ago. We wanted to bring this a great event to the city and, you know, show our city up and everyone can see what it's like. And we participated in two Memorial Cups as a team, and you know, I've been to about 10, so I know what the event brings to a city, and I know what Windsor's going to do a great job of hosting it. We've got volunteers. We're close to Detroit. It's my favorite city, obviously, from here, and people are going to be really impressed with it.
Warren, how has your hockey club been preparing for the Memorial Cup? The Spitfires were knocked out in the first round by the London Knights back in April. Just how have you been preparing for this tournament, knowing that you have no games to prepare for?
Well, we did a little homework. We talked to, you know, Swinigan was the last team to do it and win it. And, you know, I have a team with, you know, 10 guys that are signed professionally. So they got a little antsy, and we had to do some things out of the box. You know, we did a lot of running to get back in shape, like a little mini training camp. Then we brought university players in to scrimmage against our guys, and which brought up the tempo of the thing, you know, 25, 24-year-old guys that are maybe a bit quicker but not as skilled to bring the tempo up. So we've been going 3 days on, one off, and we gave the kids a week off right after we lost to London. So it's interesting. I mean, I'm just going to watch. I think the guys know we're having visitors come in and talk, old players to the guys, and I think the players know that it's under a week and they're getting ready for St. John here, and they're excited about it. So we've been on it, working out. It's been extremely tough. We challenge the kids. They've been working hard at it, and they know what the job at hand is.
Warren, one player that everyone around here is very curious about is Logan Stanley. How has he progressed in suffering that torn meniscus in his right knee back on January 17th?
Well, you know what? We really missed him. I think with him, we would have had a good playoff run. Obviously, a big body who can kill penalties and move pucks for us, and he munches minutes here in junior. So I'm glad, obviously, he went to Winnipeg 3 weeks ago and got cleared. So he's been cleared for contact. And in the scrimmages, he's looked pretty good. You know, you never get to a real game situation what it's like in a game, but he's progressed well, and, you know, might take a game or two to get the timing, but he's in great shape. For all Winnipeg fans, he's 100% healthy, and he's ready to go. So our top 4D are as good as anybody's, and with him in there now, our penalty kill will be even better.
Warren Reichel is our guest on the program. Warren is the general manager of the Windsor Spitfires. The Spitfires are the host team of the upcoming Memorial Cup. Warren, you mentioned that you're a team, you know, laden with drafted players already. You mentioned Logan Stanley, Mikhail Sergachev of the Montreal Canadiens, Thomas Chabot, and Logan Brown of the Ottawa Senators. You also have a guy that's expected to go in the top five of the 2017 NHL draft. That's, of course, Gabe Vilardi. You know, just how important has Gabe Vilardi been to this Spitfires team this year, and how much do you think that he's developed and learned by playing with those guys who've already been drafted into the NHL?
Well, he's been great for us. He's been here 2 years now, and you know, he was my second pick overall in the OHL draft, and he can really play, that's for sure. And I mean, when he's going, our team's tough to beat, and obviously with a lot of the guys in the team, he's gelled with well. You can't even tell that he's, you know, 18-year-old kid. He plays like he's 20. He's strong from the circles down, and, you know, he's coveted, obviously, for the NHL draft. But I guess from the tone of my voice, I'm used to it by seeing him twice a week for the last 2 years. But he's a great kid, and, you know, he's going to be a great pick for anybody who gets him. And for all those people watching out there that will see him in the Memorial Cup, he's a guy to watch for sure.
Warren, in addition to getting the Spitfires ready for the Memorial Cup, how much scouting has Rocky Thompson and the coaching staff been doing of the OHL final between the Erie Otters and the Mississauga Steelheads and the other leagues, the WHL and the QMJHL?
Well, first of all, for our league, we know our opponents very well. Obviously, we play them, and, you know, Ontario League is a small league where you can easily travel. So we've been at games. We're at the Monday game in Mississauga. We watch tapes. We played against Erie seven times, I think, six times this year. I think we're split with them. I went out to Regina, watched the first two games at Seattle at Regina, so that was a good individual watching those kids and their lines and their sequences and what they like to do. Rocky and Trevor Lutowski have been watching tapes of other leagues too, and I sent one of my scouts out to St. John's for 4 days to see the first four games. So we're well repaired. There's no secrets. When the puck drops next Friday, everybody knows everyone. As you know, there's no real surprises in scouting. You got to do the work. You're not going to pull a guy out of nowhere or find out something about someone you don't already know. So we're prepared in that too. And, you know, Bob Bugner's back home now from San Jose, and he's helping out. And DJ Smith's back from Toronto Maple Leafs, assistant coach, and he's with us too. So all hands on deck here. We've had a lot of old players come in here. Henry, Kerry Young, you know, local guy Steve Ott. Everyone's rallying around our team to win this thing.
Martin, the Reichel boys haven't quite eclipsed what the Shannon brothers were able to do in Windsor for all-time points. But what was it like for you having another one of your sons, Maddox this time, play for your team?
I know it was exciting. And, you know, he had a good year in Junior B. And he's a big, tall kid who has obviously skating is a bit off right now. But we had eight guys hurt, I think, at one point. We needed them from our farm team and from the LaSalle Vipers. So we did bring him up, and he played very well. We played some limited minutes for us, but it was kind of good to see the name out there again. Obviously, I think Kirby gave him a call. He says, thanks for the contribution. Like, I think Kirby had whatever he had, 200 points, and then Maddox had two, and he goes, hey, thanks for the contribution. So it's pretty funny, but it was nice to see him out there, and, you know, it was nice. But we needed players. We pulled up a lot of players. We had injuries, obviously, to Stanley, all kinds of injuries, suspensions. A real trying year, but everyone's healthy now, and we're getting ready for it.
Warren, you just mentioned Kirby. Did you have any chance to watch him play in the American Hockey League playoffs at all?
Yeah, actually, I was down there. It was funny you asked. I was down in Mississauga, watching Erie Mississauga next night, Syracuse. And then, obviously, I watch him on TV all the time. I saw him against the Moose many times, too. So, yeah, he's in there in Syracuse in a tough series right now, and you know, it's interesting to watch his development too as you go along, these kids, how they develop, like much like these kids are going to develop into pros. So it's exciting.
Warren Reichel, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Warren, the Spitfires have been backstopped by Michael DiPietro all season long. He's expected to be, if not the first goaltender taken in the upcoming NHL draft, then certainly one of the first goaltenders. You know, what makes him so special? Why has he been so successful as your goaltender for the majority of this season?
Well, to give you a little background, Gabe Velarde was second overall pick. He's 99 board, and we grabbed Mikey DiPietro with the 22 pick, who was a second rounder. I don't know, people know Mike DiPietro played with my son Maddox for 8 years in AAA. So I known him since he was 10 years old. I used to shoot on him as hard as I could when he was 9, 10 years old, and he wanted more. But he's such a good kid. I think the biggest character, he's such a good kid, and he cares. His fitness level is through the roof. He's a great kid, and he plays, and he wants to stop every puck, whether it's in practice. It reminded me of Dominic Hasek back in the day when I played in the minors, that he just wanted to stay in net and not get scored on. And this is the case with Mikey DiPietro here. He's a local boy, so that adds flavor to the Memorial Cup here. He's a great kid, and he competes, and he's only 6 feet. In the world of, you know, 6'4 monsters and that, he's not a monster, but he's good enough. He stops pucks, and he's a heck of a player.
Warren, final question for you here. Wanted to ask you about Sean Day. He was granted exceptional status to be drafted into the Ontario Hockey League a couple of years back. You guys acquired him from the Mississauga Steelheads. What made you want to acquire Sean Day, and how have you seen his game grow?
Well, yeah, he was granted exceptional status, and you know, he might have had some things going on in Mississauga, but he's a Detroit boy right across the river, and I just like his skating, his ability to break out pucks. He's probably the best skater in the Canadian Hockey League, hands down. He's 230 pounds. He skates. He shoots it. He's a great player, obviously signed by
the Rangers.
Rangers blanking out there. Sorry, by the Rangers. And he's a great player. He got here. I think he needed just a little more structure in his game, and Rocky Thompson had given him that. He meshes well with his teammates. He's a happy-go-lucky kid. He's here. I think took the pressure off him of being that, specially selected kid. And, you know, Mississauga is a tough market. It's Leaf Nation and stuff like that. He's come here and he's thrived. And for all the viewers and people, he's a good hockey player. He's going to play in the NHL. But the skating is outrageous. I've never seen nothing like it.
Warren Reichel is the general manager of the Windsor Spitfires. The Spitfires and the city of Windsor are going to host the Memorial Cup starting next week. Warren, it's going to be a great week. It's always one of the best weeks on the hockey calendar. Enjoy it. I know it might be a little bit tough when you're in the middle of it and you got all these important games, but it should be a great week having the focus of the hockey world on the city of Windsor.
Thanks, fellas. Enjoy your day.
Likewise, Warren. Thanks again. Let's head to break. When we come back, we are going to talk about and begin our UFA of the Week segment. This one's sort of a quasi UFA. We'll explain more on the other side. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
Ezra, Dave, and Drew return on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Ilya Kovalchuk definitely wants to return to the NHL next season, and the New Jersey Devils will facilitate a sign and trade in order to make it happen. Devils GM Ray Shiro told Pierre LeBrun, Kovalchuk's agent, has been given permission to talk to other teams.
Ilya Kovalchuk, a blast from the past. Former Atlanta Thrasher, former New Jersey Devil. He spent the past four seasons in the KHL with St. Petersburg, but he wants to come back to North America. Officially property of the New Jersey Devils. Not going to play for the Devils. The Devils don't want him back. He doesn't want to play in New Jersey. But they will facilitate a sign and trade with Kovalchuk. So he is our quasi-UFA of the week. If you're a team in the NHL, and you're one of the 30 teams in the NHL, how intrigued are you by the return of Ilya Kovalchuk? Especially after you saw the success that Alex Radulov had with the Montreal Canadiens this season.
Yeah, and Ilya Kovalchuk just put up 78 points for SKA St. Petersburg in the KHL. So it's not like Ilya Kovalchuk doesn't have a lot of hockey left in him. And, you know, you mentioned that the Devils are interested in signing and trading him. And this is just getting better and better for the New Jersey Devils as the days go by, right? Drew, they win the draft lottery. They get the number one overall pick. So they're going to take Nico Hischier. They're going to take Nolan Patrick. We're not sure who they're going to take. It's a lot closer than it was last year when everyone knew that Toronto was going to take Austin Matthews, right? But Ilya Kovalchuk has been in the KHL for the last 4 years now. But you mentioned Alex Radulov. And, you know, Alex Radulov had a fantastic regular season for the Canadiens and followed that up with a great first round performance for the Montreal Canadiens. I don't care what anybody says. There are going to be teams that are knocking on Ray Shiro's door to acquire Ilya Kovalchuk. And I don't think necessarily that Ilya Kovalchuk's going to play, you know, top line on a team. Maybe he does, but you're talking about a guy who had multiple 50-goal seasons. He had multiple 40-goal seasons. I think he had five 40-goal seasons, if I'm not mistaken. And he took the New Jersey Devils to the Stanley Cup final back in 2012. If you remember, he was fantastic for the Devils. So someone's going to give up a lot to get Ilya Kovalchuk. It might be a combination of a player and a draft pick or players and a draft pick. But for the Devils, they thought that Ilya Kovalchuk was never coming back. So for Ray Shiro, he's in the best position of any general manager. He's just waiting there and waiting for offers to come in, right, Dave? So, I mean, this is great news for the Devils. They had a very disappointing regular season, but they get the first overall pick, and now the bonus is they're going to get some assets in return for Kovalchuk.
And, you know, a lot of the capologists for the team in the greater New York area right now are doing some math and trying to make it work for their teams, because the word was that Kovalchuk wanted to stay in New York area. So obviously not playing for the Devils, but potentially the Rangers or the Islanders even. But we'll see if they're, you know, right now that probably wouldn't work based on what his potential cap hit would be. If they get creative, you never know what could happen. So it'll be very interesting to see where he kind of fits into a team like that. He obviously is not coming back to play for a – I mean, I don't see him saying, I want to come back and play on a Vegas-style team, like a young team. He wants to be on an established team with a chance to win a Stanley Cup and make the money, but obviously still have a chance to win that Stanley Cup.
And Drew, if you want to start talking about, you know, some of the possible trade destinations, I mean, where do you begin? I think we could probably list off 29 teams. You just mentioned Alex Radulov. Wouldn't Ilya Kovalchuk look good in Montreal Canadiens uniform? Wouldn't he look good?
A team that needs goal scoring, because the Habs, if we saw anything this year, is that they don't have enough goal scoring as presently constructed.
Wouldn't he look good in an LA Kings uniform? The LA Kings certainly need some more goal scoring. Wouldn't he look good in a St. Louis Blues uniform? We saw, I can't think of his name right now, return from the KHL.
Sobotka.
Vladimir Sobotka returned from the KHL, so maybe that's an option. I mean, there are so many teams that would love to have a player like Ilya Kovalchuk on their team, right? So I don't think it's a question of if Ilya Kovalchuk is coming back to the NHL anymore. His agent, Jay Grossman, has already said that he's coming back,
yeah, he's
right?
Coming
so
back.
A team's going to get a big boost getting Ilya Kovalchuk on their team.
I just want to say a couple sort of caveats. He officially can't sign a new NHL deal until July 1st. So he's not in play for the expansion draft, and he's not really in play at the NHL draft. So this is a guy who can only sign once the July 1st, the new calendar year for the NHL begins, or the new business year for the NHL begins.
I think as hit it on the head on to start the segment off, I think the biggest winners in this whole thing are the New Jersey Devils. I mean, think about it. You have an asset now that you weren't going to have, you weren't planning on having, and now it's fallen into your lap, in addition to the first overall pick falling in your lap. So if you're New Jersey right now, you have an embarrassment of riches in that sense because you weren't anticipating it. And so you're going to sit around and you're going to look at these teams and you're going to let him kind of go ahead and farm himself out to a variety of organizations. And then from there, you can basically say what looks best for the New Jersey Devils moving forward.
It was only 6 years ago where he signed that 15-year contract with the Devils, the one that was controversial, and then the Devils got punished for it because it violated the collective bargaining agreement at that right. point in time. And then he plays a couple years and he goes to the KHL, and that contract is terminated. Mm-hmm. Is it smell kosher to you that the Devils are able to get out from underneath that contract, and then he comes back, and even though that contract would still be in existence if he had stayed in the NHL this entire time, does it sit right with you that he's then able to just, that contract is magically terminated, and then he's able to come back, even though that contract would still be active?
Yeah, but if you think about it, the Devils really got screwed in the first place with Kovalchuk leaving, right? They signed him to that contract, and then all of a sudden he just ups and leaves, right?
Sure.
So, I mean, I don't think that anything unfair is happening here. I have no problem with it. Another team to mention, Drew, as far as being in the Ilya Kovalchuk sweepstakes is the Florida Panthers. And Ilya Kovalchuk has mentioned that he would prefer to stay in the New York area, but Florida is another option there. And you remember they acquired Thomas Vanek prior to the trade deadline. That contract is going to be off the books, right? So there's some extra money there. Florida also has a lot of young assets.
Sure.
So I would look at Florida possibly as a destination for Kovalchuk in addition to some other teams. LA I would throw in there. I would throw Montreal in there.
It's sort
the
of
Rangers.
It's sort of too bad that the Islanders are always in this sort of state of upheaval, because wouldn't he look great on the left side of John Tavares?
Yeah.
A team that is, always looking, they haven't been able to replace that position since they lost Kyle Okposo.
And Drew, I'm a Devils fan and all that. I've always been a big Kovalchuk fan, and you forget how dominant he was, not just when he first came into the league with the Atlanta Thrashers, but how good he was on the New Jersey Devils. He was a point-per-game player on the Devils. We mentioned that unlikely run to the Stanley Cup Final in 2012. The Kings obviously won that year, but Ilya Kovalchuk had 19 points in 23 games. He was phenomenal, and, that was just 5 years ago. So it's not like Ilya Kovalchuk is 42, 43 years old and he's towards the end of his career. He might have 5 or 6 years left in him in the NHL. So whoever gets Ilya Kovalchuk is getting a very good player, not just an average player.
Well, that's the question mark, is that, I haven't been keeping up to date on KHL action, so I haven't been able to see Ilya Kovalchuk. But you have to assume that the teams that will be interested in him will have had an opportunity to scout him, be it in the KHL, be it in the World Hockey Championships, so be it in whatever action they've been able to see him in.
How about the Washington Capitals? Oh. You've got fellow countryman Alex Ovechkin, you've got Evgeny Kuznetsov, you've got Dmitry Orlov. Maybe Alex Ovechkin makes a phone call to Ilya Kovalchuk and he says, hey, do you want to win a Stanley Cup?
Well, I got two questions. One, if you're an opposing general manager, and you clearly have to give up an asset to get him. It has to be a sign and trade, because the only way to sign him as an unrestricted free agent is to get permission from all the other 31 NHL clubs. So that's not going to happen. Only the Devils are able to sign him without needing permission. Devils will sign him and then trade him. So what would you be willing to give up for him when he is, to some degree, because you haven't seen him in NHL action in 5 seasons, a bit of an unknown quantity, against NHL caliber talent?
I don't know how unknown he is, Drew, because he's done it so many years in the NHL, and the Continental Hockey League is the second best league outside of the NHL. Maybe not so much anymore, but I mean, I don't think there's any questions. Everybody knows that Ilya Kovalchuk is a phenomenal talent, but as far as what you would give up to get him, I mean, you're going to have to give up something significant, because there are other teams knocking at Reishiro's door, right? So I think you're going to be talking about a roster player and a draft pick, or maybe a prospect, a roster player and a draft pick. You're going to have to give up something significant. I don't think you're going to be able to get him for a fourth round draft pick.
Yeah, I mean, But you make a valid point, Drew. I mean, he's 34 years old. He's not necessarily going to be, you know, breaking down the door. He may not be, but he could add that depth to a team that really needs, you know, like a Washington, like a Montreal, that really needs that secondary scoring to be able to spread it out a little bit. Are you going to give up a lot to get him? I don't know. I mean, again, it really becomes a function of how many teams are, quote, banging down the door to try and sign him. Right?
We know the Devils need defensemen, right? So I would assume that the Devils would prefer to get a defenseman. But I think at this point, the Devils, if the trade is right, the trade offer is right, they'd probably take a young forward prospect and a draft pick, something like that. But I mean, Ilya Kovalchuk, I don't think is going to step into the NHL, Drew, and score 50 goals and 100 points next year. Wouldn't be surprised if he scores 30, though.
Well, we shall see. The return of Ilya Kovalchuk is on the immediate horizon sometime after July the 1st. When we come back, the Buffalo Sabres have a new general manager. He's a Winnipeg guy named Jason Botterill. We'll be joined by Bill Hopp to discuss that. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're on the curve on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of the hour here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. That's the best way to join the conversation. Facebook.com/Illegal Curve and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome back to the program Bill Hoppe. Bill covers the Buffalo Sabres on BuffaloHockeyBeat.com and the Olean Times Herald. Bill, good morning and thanks for joining us.
Good morning to you guys.
Bill, obviously we brought you on to discuss the Sabres' hiring of Jason Botterill as their new general manager. He replaces Tim Murray, who was deposed earlier this month alongside head coach Dan Bylsma. Your thoughts on Botterill being hired? When they made the announcement, did you think that he was the right man for this job at this point in time?
I think so, and I'm still surprised Tim Murray got fired. I don't think he should have been fired. But Sabres, they went out, and in my mind, they got the number one GM in waiting, one of the best young minds in hockey, in my opinion. I think if you ranked all the young executives, all the young assistants in the front offices in the league, Jason Botterill might be the number one name that comes out as the top GM in waiting. So I think they did a good job in hiring him. I mean, he's only 40. He's the second youngest GM, I think, and he seems like a very progressive mind. And it's hard to say 2 days after they hired him, they got the hire right. But I think if you want to judge it at this point in time, they did.
Bill, why do you think Sabres owner Terry Pegula ultimately chose Jason Botterill over others? Paul Fenton was interviewed. Bill Zito was interviewed. Why is Jason Botterill the best fit for the Sabres team?
A lot of different reasons. I think the fact that he won two cups in Pittsburgh, he rose to the ranks there quickly. He was their director of hockey operations, and then within a couple of years, he was an assistant GM, and he ran Wilkes-Barre, their AHL affiliate, and then he was associate GM. I think in Pittsburgh he's been through a lot, and it's not always good time. It hasn't always been good times the last few years. It looked like they were a team in decline just a couple of years ago. And Jason Botterill is very honest in saying that those rough times have made him a better executive. So I think stuff like that, doing a little bit of everything over these last 10 years, he played the game. He played for the Sabres. He played in Rochester, and I think all those things made him attractive. And I think Jason Botterill seemed very comfortable in Buffalo. He didn't play here long. He was mostly in Rochester, but there was just he felt a certain fit here that he wouldn't have felt in other places.
Bill, the Pens organization focused quite a bit on AHL development. How important will this be for the new GM and his focus on the Rochester Americans?
Oh, it's huge, and that was a big part of his news conference the other day. The Amherst, we're a very proud AHL organization for a long, long time. Perennial playoff team, turning out talent, popular veterans, going to the Calder Cup, and they've been bad the last few years. They've missed the playoffs three straight years, and they have a very loyal fan base, and they're starting to lose those fans. And beyond that, they have to develop players for the Sabres, and they probably haven't done that as well as they did 10 years ago. So that's going to be a big focus, is just development. And I think that's something that was a little lost these past few years, and something he did very well in Wilkes-Barre. Just, I mean, guys like Jake Gensel, who might be in the Conn Smythe conversation. I mean, he was in Wilkes-Barre earlier this year. Matt Murray won them a cup last year, and he was in Wilkes-Barre. So Jason Botchel knows the AHL very well, having played and been an executive.
Bill Hoppe is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're discussing the Buffalo Sabres hiring of Jason Botterill as their new general manager. You can read Bill's work at BuffaloHockeyBeat.com and in the Olean Times Herald. Bill, obviously, you know, Jason Botterill has a lot of work ahead of him. One of the key decisions he has to make is who's going to be the head coach of this Buffalo Sabres team at the start of the season. Is there a leader in the clubhouse at this point in time, or do you think that it's a pretty clean slate that Jason's working with?
I think it's a clean slate. I haven't heard a ton of names. Rick Tockett was one name that was thrown out there last week, and it makes sense because he's had a lot of success in Pittsburgh, and he knows him very well. But I asked him about that, and I couldn't tell if he would go with a younger coach, a first-time head coach, or he would go for a veteran coach. And I don't think from what I gathered, he doesn't even know right now. He spoke glowingly of Mike Sullivan, a guy that I don't think was on a lot of people's radar a couple of years ago to become an NHL head coach again. And he talked about how he reinvented himself, becoming a development coach. He went back to the AHL. So I'm not sure if he'll go for a veteran or a young guy. But I mean, Phil Housley should get an interview, in my opinion. Lindy Ruff's name has been out there. I don't know if Botchel would hire Lindy. Kevin Dineen, I think, deserves another chance. So there'll be some interesting names out there. And he wants to have a coach by the draft, which obviously makes sense.
Bill, this is a Winnipeg radio show, so we have to ask you about number 9. What's Evander Kane's future in Buffalo?
That's a good question. I'm not sure. He was tied to Tim Murray. Tim Murray gave up a ton to get him, and he finally paid off this year. He has a year left on his deal, as you probably know. He had a terrific year. If the Sabres want to trade him now, he has real, genuine value again. That's something we couldn't say a year ago. There were all those rumors going on a year ago, and my thought was, like, he doesn't really have much value. But I think he could be worth maybe that defenseman the Sabres need now. But I think Jason Botchel is the kind of guy that would give him a clean slate. Evander behaved last year. He had probably one of the better seasons in the league that no one realized. So I think if he behaves and has a good season, maybe they offer him an extension. I don't think it's crazy to think.
Bill, you know, they haven't had a president of hockey operations since Pat LaFontaine had that title a few years ago. Do you think that they're going to bring someone in that capacity?
My thought is no. We thought maybe they would go in that direction, but Jason Botchel said that they hadn't had any of those discussions with the Pegula. So my thought is that they're probably going to hire some assistant GMs in the coming months. The Sabres had a lot of scouts, and their front office is pretty big in some regards, but they haven't over the years had a lot of assistant GMs and so forth. So Jason Botterill comes from that background where he was with Bill Guerin and Mark Recchi, and Fitzgerald was there. So I expect them to hire a bunch of assistants.
Bill Hoppe is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're discussing the Sabres hiring of Jason Botterill as their new general manager. Bill, you know, you look at a guy like Jack Eichel, and we know he is the linchpin to any success that the Sabres are going to have going forward. Number 2 overall pick a couple of years ago, right after Connor McDavid. You know, how important is it for Jason Botterill to sort of establish a good relationship with Jack Eichel, given sort of the, I don't want to say drama, but the murkiness of the relationship that he supposedly had with Dan Bylsma and maybe the previous regime there in Buffalo?
Oh, it's huge. And he talked about it a little bit. Jack's playing at the World Championship right now, something he likes, a guy that wants to play in the spring. But, I mean, yeah, ultimately, it's on Jack, too, because whatever happened with Bylsma, and we don't know the whole story, but pretty confident saying he was pretty frustrated in the way the Sabres played, and there was definitely a disconnect between the two. And that's on Jack, too. And whatever happened, he's being blamed for Dan's firing. So I think the Sabres and Jason Botterill really have to get them together and establish that relationship. And this is going to follow Jack Eichel for a long time, whether or not he had a role in the firing. And it's on him to establish something new and different. I mean, he's a young guy, and there's a ton of pressure on him. And he's going to have to learn to deal with that a little better, I think.
Bill, the NHL draft is just over a month away. The Buffalo Sabres have the 8th overall pick. They took Alex Nylander last year in Buffalo with the 8th overall pick. Do you see Jason Botterill maybe moving that pick, maybe trying to move up, or do you think that they're going to stay at 8 and try to get another good quality player like Alex Nylander?
That's a good question. I'm not really sure at this point. The draft, as you guys know, isn't really that great this year. I think maybe a player they could get at 8, they could get it 14 or something. So maybe they move down. Maybe there's someone they want and they move up, but I really don't know at this time.
Bill, what kind of buzz, if any, has the news of the Winter Classic between the Sabres and the Rangers generated in Buffalo?
Not much, to be honest with you. It had come out a couple months ago that they were in it, and that was kind of the first wave of interest in it, I think. It was weird timing being announced during the intermission. What was it, Tuesday night?
Yeah.
But as it grows near, it'll generate a lot of buzz. The first Winter Classic here was a huge, huge success. The Sabres are actually going to be the home team in New York, which is kind of weird. Mm-hmm. But I think it'll be well-received again.
Bill, expansion draft is coming up. Are we going to have any surprises, or does Jason Botterill know who he's going to expose in the expansion draft?
I'm not sure. Sabres have a very good young goalie in Rochester named Linus Allmark. I think he could be a number one in the future. Might have to expose him. It seemed like Tim Murray was owed a favor by George McPhee from an old Washington deal, and it seemed like the Sabres would be able to keep Linus Allmark. Now, I mean, all bets are off. I mean, the Sabres have a lot of guys, I think Matt Molson, maybe even Tyler Ennis, that they would love for the Golden Knights to take that salary off their hands. But I'm not sure at this point who they would protect and who they wouldn't.
Now, Bill, Robin Lehner is a pending RFA. Any chance that the Buffalo Sabres are going to be in the trade market or the free agency market for a goaltender, maybe a Marc-Andre Fleury, for example?
I doubt it. Lehner could be hot and cold, but he had a pretty good year. He's still pretty affordable. They're going to have to, if they want to re-sign him, they give him a 3-year, $9 million type deal, or 2 years, six, something like that. So I think they'd probably just stick with him.
Bill, we'll let you go on this last question. You look at the contracts that Jason Botterill's inheriting. Some of them are, to put it frankly, they're bad contracts. I mean, that Matt Molson contract is an albatross that's hanging over this franchise. With that in mind, how much is of the priority is for Jason Botterill? I mean, obviously, improving the team and getting him back to the playoffs is a priority, but how much of a factor is sort of maybe clearing off some of that dead weight, if possible, would factor into his job duties?
Oh, yeah, that's a huge thing. And he's a cap guy. He's a contract guy, so he knows it very well. And he kind of alluded that something like that might a buyout or I don't know what could be coming in the coming weeks. And yeah, that's a bad contract. And they got 14 goals out of him this year, and that was an improvement, Matt Molson. And the Sabres, it's weird. They're basically a cap team. They're almost right up against the cap, and that's usually reserved for contenders, for playoff teams. But they gave out a lot of bad contracts a couple of years ago, and it's biting them now.
Bill Hoppe covers the Buffalo Sabres for BuffaloHockeyBeat.com and the Olean Times Herald. Bill, appreciate your time this morning. Thanks for joining us to discuss the hiring of Jason Botterill.
All right, thank you, guys.
Take care, Bill. When we come back, we look around the NHL, some news and notes, one final segment to put a bow on this Saturday morning edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show returns. Now you're on the curve on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Leaving it for Ledoux, handing it on to Carter. Carter looking for his 30th. Pearson, lost to Burns. Pearson scores!
NHL news and notes.
That's Tanner Pearson scoring for the LA Kings earlier this season. He signs a four-year, $15 million contract extension. He was an RFA as of July 1st. He gets $3.75 million per year in terms of a salary cap hit. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. One final segment for you on this Saturday morning. It's brought to you by our good friends at Bell Acres Golf and Country Club. If you're looking for a place to maybe swing the sticks this weekend, it's supposed to be a nice weather weekend, Bell Acres Golf and Country Club is where we would suggest that you tee it up. Great 18-hole course. It's in great shape. Lovely patio to relax after the round with maybe a cocktail or two while enjoying a prairie day. Bell Acres Golf and Country Club. For more information, bellacres.com.
Drew, just make sure that you don't swing your stick in the studio here.
Not even touching that one. Not even touching. Are you guys done taking photos? You've been sitting here while I'm doing the promo read, taking photos for the last 5 minutes. Neither of you are getting any more handsome, so just take the photo and be done with it.
Well, Drew, we have, you know, our social media accounts. We have to, pump out some content.
Yeah, I mean, you know, sorry, Drew, that you don't realize that a website needs some new, fresh content.
You took eight photos that were exactly the same.
Well, I was trying to be Kramer as he was being George, and I was saying, you are a sexy guy.
Yeah.
And as he did the bear pose, and he was wearing underwear. It
don't
was
worry,
fine.
Drew. You won't be in any of the pictures.
Oh, yeah. No, we put that, for years, our Twitter background was you as the – it was me, Rich, Ez, and then Drew
you
as –
You had Remus in there and when I wasn't even in there.
No, but you were in there.
Yeah, as the cartoon cutout character.
It was as who?
Mr.
Kroger.
Yeah, Mr. from the Seinfeld episode. Yeah, I appreciated the love. Thanks very much for keeping me so dear.
People love that. I'm not gonna lie. Ezzy loved that. There was a lot. We got a lot of good response to that. Little hijinks there.
Who cares about my emotions? That doesn't matter. That's
secondary.
You like
taking it for the team, though.
I have a pretty good thick skin. I can't argue with you there. So 4 years, $15 million for Tanner Pearson of the LA Kings. $3.75 million per season.
By the way, Dave, what was the name of the company that Kruger ran?
It was Kruger Industrial.
Yeah.
Or Kruger.
Industrial Smoothing.
Yeah, exactly.
You guys are idiots. Both of you are absolute blithering idiots. I might say that. 4 years, $15 million for Tanner Pearson. As you know, do you like the number? I mean, there's no doubt that the Kings had to re-sign him. The Kings are a team that can't score, and Pearson, you know, is one of their few goal scorers on the team. Do you like the number? Do you like the dollar value? Everything's sort of kosher there for you.
Yeah, I do like the dollar value and the amount of years that they gave Tanner Pearson. That's obviously Rob Blake's first contract signing there, right, Drew? So They've still got to sign Tyler Toffoli, and he's not going to be done there. But those were the two big RFAs for the LA Kings. So Tanner Pearson's coming off a career year for the LA Kings, and you know, we remember him as a member of that 70s line with Toffoli and Jeff Carter. They were really good when the Kings won the Cup back in 2014. So very good signing, you know. And I like that they didn't give him 6 or 7 years, right? Like when you're talking about franchise players, the Jets giving Mark Scheifele 8 years, obviously. I don't think that you necessarily give Pearson that type of contract.
Mm-hmm.
But you mentioned that the LA Kings had a lot of trouble scoring goals this year. They were fine defensively. I mean, this is still a very good defensive team. And, you know, there's going to be some changes there this year, obviously, with John Stevens replacing Daryl Sutter. But we talked about it a couple of segments ago. I still think the LA Kings have to be active in the free agent market. But the problem is they have salary cap issues, right?
Sure.
So, but yeah, the Pearson signing's great. I mean, he's a good offensive player for sure.
Dave, any sort of quibbles with this contract from the Kings' perspective?
No, they needed to get it done. He had 22 goals this season, and like as he talked about, they needed goal scoring. So I think it was a good move by LA.
The Blackhawks also dip into the free agency and prevent one of their own from hitting that point in time. They re-sign RFA Richard Panik. He gets a 2-year, $5.6 million deal. I think he leaves a little bit of money on the table, but is Panik a guy who's recognizing that he's in a pretty good situation at this point of his career with what usually is a perennial cup contender in the Blackhawks?
Yeah, and you know, Richard Panik, guys, is a guy that has been a bit of a journeyman in the NHL, and he's only 26 years old, right? He started his career off with the Tampa Bay Lightning, then he went to the Toronto Maple Leafs, and then he ends up in Chicago, and he had a career year this year. And it doesn't hurt, Dave, when you're playing with Jonathan Toews, right? So Richard Panik is one of of those guys. I think that's a perfect complement for the Chicago Blackhawks. And, you know, he wasn't very good against the Nashville Predators in the first round. But let's be honest, Drew, who really was?
Nobody.
So I have no problem with that. It's a two-year contract. He's one of those depth players, secondary scoring. I mean, the guys that you count on for the goals continue to be Jonathan Toews, Marian Hossa, Patrick Kane, Artemi Panarin, right? So, yeah, I have no problem with that contract.
Yeah, and I think he, like you said, Drew, I think he realized that he probably left a little money on the table, but because of the fit and the fact that, you know, he had career highs in Chicago this season, he's thinking that that's probably a good testament to the potential success he could have moving forward.
Former Windsor Spitfire, Richard Panik.
So he'll be partying at the disco, not panicking.
Rory, cut his mic. He's done for the show. He's done. He's off. That's it. Yes. That's it for him.
No need to panic, Drew.
Yeah, both of you are getting close to being eliminated for the rest of this show. Two signings in San Jose. They sign a couple of their RFAs. Melker Carlson gets a $2 million cap hit per season, and Jonas Donskoi gets a $1.9 million cap hit. Two other guys who are depth guys in what is likely to be a bit of a season of upheaval in San Jose. Of course, we know that Marleau and Thornton are both UFAs, so there's some question about where things are going to go in San Jose.
Yeah, I'd be shocked if Joe Thornton isn't back, but I'm not so sure about Patrick Marleau. But Melker Carlson, you know, not as big of a fan of his game as I am of Jonas Donskoi's game. Jonas Donskoi was a bit of an unknown. He came over from the Finnish league, and he was really good, especially last year when the San Jose Sharks went to the Stanley Cup Finals. So, I mean, those are important signings to make, right? Donskoi is a guy who's relatively young at 25 years old. He had a bit of a rough season. Mm-hmm. As I mentioned, he was better last year for the San Jose Sharks, but he was an unknown coming over from the Finnish league. But really good skater, really good defensive forward. You can put him out there really in all situations, penalty kill, power play. He's a bit of a Swiss Army knife, kind of a Michael Frolik type of player. Frolik probably has higher-end scoring abilities, but Donskoi is a good player, can play on your second line or third line. And Melker Carlson, again, I haven't been as sold on his game. He's shown flashes, but I'm not too sure if he's more than a third or fourth liner.
Yeah, they're just depth moves. These guys both won their respective Sharks Rookies of the Year in 14-15 and 15-16. So decent players. Nothing you're not going to win. You know, these are just depth guys, so it's probably good to retain these types of players.
The kind of player that every team needs just to sort of fill in some of those gaps and be at a reasonable contract price. Last one on the news and notes for this Saturday morning, the announcement of the 2018 Winter Classic. It is the New York Rangers at the Buffalo Sabres in Citi Field in New York, the home of the New York Mets. The reason why the Sabres are the home team is it's in the Rangers' contract that they cannot play a home game. This is in their lease with Madison Square Garden. They cannot play a home game anywhere other than Madison Square Garden, so they have to be designated as the visitors, as the Rangers and Sabres will do battle at Citi Field, the home of the New York Mets.
Shouldn't the Islanders be in this game?
Would make sense to me. I mean, I'm not sure why they're bringing in Buffalo, but I don't know. The whole thing is a little bit bizarre.
I mean, I'm a big fan of the outdoor games. We obviously just had an outdoor game in October in Winnipeg, but you know, there were talks about the Islanders moving from Barclays Arena closer to a site on Citi Field, right? Close to Citi Field. But
yeah,
I mean, look, the Sabres are an up-and-coming young team. They've obviously got some moves to make, and the Rangers, you know, are one of those perennial Stanley Cup contenders. So, I mean, it's going to be a great game, but I think the Islanders should have been in this one.
Yeah, you know, I don't really care. It kind of feels like these teams just keep – like, it feels like the same teams are getting mentioned all the time now at this point. Like, the Buffalo – when I heard Buffalo Sabres, I was like, Sabres again? Like, how many times are we going to see the Sabres? So, I mean, having said that, Citi Field, we were there to see a Mets game a few years back when we were at the draft, and it's a cool stadium, and it'll be a fun environment, but I just don't get overly excited about the Sabres.
Yeah, the All-Star game was there that year.
The MLB All-Star game. That's it for this Saturday morning in the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Big thanks to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, Keener Jerseys, and Bell Acres Golf and Country Club. Support these fine Winnipeg businesses because they support the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is illegalcurve.com. In case you missed any of the program, it's available for download on tsn1290.ca. and on our website. And of course, you can subscribe to the show whether you're on Android or Apple device. Get it sent to you each and every week. Big props to producer Rory, doing a great job behind the board. For Dave Manuk, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Stay tuned for World Hockey Championships here on TSN 1290.